Hello, my name is Dan, Dan Rosanova, I guess, for anyone who doesn't know me. I'm a senior program manager at Microsoft. I'm on the hyperscale compute team, which really means that I'm the program manager running Service Bus and everything in it. So Relay, messaging, which is queues and topics, and event hubs. I'm here today to talk about event hubs in particular, although some of these topics will be applicable to all of our services. And the title of this session says it all. It's really kind of this idea of what's going on in your telemetry pipeline. Telemetry is sort of a big thing. We're doing a lot of it in Azure with event hubs. And people build pretty rich, complex solutions on top of my service and then don't really know what's happening when something goes wrong. So I'm hoping that this will give you all the information you need to actually go out and use our service effectively and understand not just when it's working, because like most messaging, no one really notices it until it breaks. It's like just invisible until then. And so I want you to notice it before it breaks. Who in the room has used Event Hubs or Service Bus at all? Okay, a couple people. Cool. We'll do a quick intro of it, and then walk through some specifics. So first thing, a little bold statement. I like to start off with bold statements and bold colors. Azure Event Hubs is the most scalable ingress service in the world. I can say that because I put the word service in there. So yes, that's true. We're past the 60 billion a day mark for events on our public platform, and growing pretty much double digit week over week. So literally every second while I'm speaking here, that's 800,000 events a second going through our pipeline. And yes, that is a lot of events. I also hope to entertain you for this hour, so bear with me a little bit. There's gonna be some photos, there might be some dancing, I don't know. So when we look at what people are doing with Event Hubs, it's again, so we don't have a UI, we don't have all this stuff. It's not something you're going to go let your customers see. It's something you're going to use to write the plumbing for your applications. So if we look at a canonical architecture for processing events in Azure, it's going to look something like this. This is not an image I made up. I'm not that creative with design, I suppose I would say. And so this is kind of what it looks like, right? You're producing events on one side, and you're moving down this pipeline to different stages of refinements. You could almost think of this like maybe the way, I don't know, now we've kind of corrupted the term data lake, but the way data lake was used by the Hadoop community before, where you have sort of raw things like events being produced, whether they're by applications or servers or IoT devices, being ingressed into the cloud and then breaking down into some streams. In this case, actually, this is really good for the end of the presentation into two streams, and then further down into things where you're going to process them and take action on them, show them to people. So, this is an important concept because even if you don't use Azure, you're going to do some sort of telemetry pipeline. It's going to look something like this. It's going to be a pipeline. And the important thing to remember with any pipeline is that it's only as strong as the weakest link in this chain, because it is a chain. That's part of why Event Hubs is so important for it. Because there's a lot of elasticity in event hubs. So you can go spin this up by yourself and do 20,000 events per second without even calling us or doing support tickets. Our biggest customers do like a gigabyte per second. So that would be like Halo and Office. So some of our really big ones. Re Sorry? Oh, yeah, a million. You can do a million on a single cluster for us. Oh, sorry. The question was how many messages a second you can do. So when we talk about what an event hub is, we'll talk in a little bit about what the infrastructure and architecture looks like. But basically, it's just a logical container. So it's limited only by the hardware that it's on. And the maximum that we've tested repeatedly is 1 million events per second of ingress per event hub. But you do need a lot of capacity for that. So this is a great design, and it's awesome, and you can build awesome stuff with it. But this is what it looks like when something goes wrong. Who has ever gotten lost in this room? No one? I was gonna say, wow, really? God, got lost on my way here this morning. So this is the most frightening thing in the world, right? When like, hey, it's broken. What's going on? Where's all our stuff? And people usually aren't happy when that happens, right? Especially if you're the one responsible for it. So this is the look I don't know. I've been using this guy's photo a lot. He's from our like gallery of licensed art we can use at Microsoft. I don't know who he is, but he's gonna hate me by the end of this year. But like, this is the look you're gonna get when someone's like, "Hey, what's happening?" And your answer is, "I yeah, I don't know. When your answer is this, right? No, that's not where you want to be. Because he's not going to be happy. You know, whether this is your customer, your boss, your significant other, whatever, no one likes that. Hey, I don't know what's going on. So it's really your responsibility to implement monitoring of your telemetry pipeline. And that's what today's talk's all going to be about. So if we look at that same diagram again, how can you monitor this? Let's start off actually, how should you monitor this? Well, you should monitor all of these points to see what's going on at each and every one, right? It's kind of a lot to monitor though. That would be in a perfect world. We don't live in a perfect world, unfortunately. So you're lucky if you monitor one of those points. We live in this world. So let's look again. What kind of things can you monitor easily, maybe? And there's one place that's the center of this chain that's pretty easy to monitor if you take a few steps, and that would be your pipeline, your ingress area. For this, it's going to be Event Hubs. If you were using Kafka, it would be Kafka. If you're using something else, whatever. But it's a place where you can monitor a lot of what's going on, and it's sort of a central place. It's sort of the pivot that everything goes through, so it's a good place to go. Let's take a second and look at the inside of Event Hubs and what this really is, what it means, how it works. So again, architectural concepts, an Event Hub is this abstract thing that you send events to. Within it, it's got partitions. Those partitions each have data within them. So they're all separate from each other. This is why it scales so well. We didn't come up and make some sort of magic networking unicorn that can do a gigabyte through a single server. No, we looked around at how do you really scale? You scale by scaling out. So each partition is an ordered store of events. Senders don't really usually know about partitions. They just send their data in, which they're going to be able to do with either AMQP or HTTP. And then event receivers hook up to those specific partitions through a consumer group to read. So this is why it's scalable. This is why we can do a gigabyte, why you can read a gigabyte. Because even if we had the magic networking unicorn and could do a gigabyte through one of these, you wouldn't be able to get a server that could read a gigabyte and actually do something useful with it. So the idea here is that you have many readers, and instead of a competing consumer, which is like a queue, that'll be my talk this afternoon, is much more about queues, this is a partition consumer. So the consumers aren't fighting with each other, they're reading exclusively. Now we do let you read more than once, and the vehicle we use to provide that is consumer groups. So each reader goes through a consumer group, and that group is a view, you can think of it as, is the entire telemetry stream. The partition itself, you could almost think of like a transaction log. I don't want to get too databasey on it, but you can think about it that way. So this is kind of what our picture looks like, right? So if we look at the runtime of this, how this gets projected onto our servers, so we have a bunch of front-end servers, which are completely stateless. We have a bunch of back-end servers, which are running on a Service Fabric ring. Service Fabric is pretty cool stuff. We use all of our services run on it. And those Service Fabric rings have containers that hold the specific partitions and are pinned to specific servers and are front-ending blobs that store all this data. So a partition is running on a node in our cluster. This back part is stateful. That's why we're using Service Fabric, so it can be stateful and can move around. We are also using the collections, the distributed collections there to do things like throttling and keep track of how much you're sending and receiving. And our front ends are stateless. So these are really kind of lightweight. Feel free to interrupt me at any time if there's any questions. I've given a few talks on this. I don't want to get too distracted on this stuff. I kind of want to move on to back to our telemetry stuff. So if we look at all this stuff, this and the previous few slides, what do we really want to know about our telemetry platform, right? Rather than talking to you about APIs and all these things, which I will talk about, I want to start at the end and work our way backwards. You really want to know how much data is coming in, right? You want to know how much data is going out. You want to know if you're a receiver, how far, if you're doing processing or something, how far behind are you, or are you totally caught up? And then this last piece, which is really, really important, you want to know how that's changing over time, right? You don't want to just know how it is today. You want to know how it was 2 weeks ago and where you think it's going to be in 2 months. turns out that's a little more complicated than it first appears. So let's take a look back at this again. So what do we want to know here, right? So first thing I said, yeah, we want to know how much data is coming in. Okay. That's easy enough. And we want to know how much data is going out. And we actually want to know per partition how much data is coming in. So when you're sending to an event hub, you have a choice whether to send to a partition or not. You can influence that through a few things on the client. Usually you don't know, but you're just getting round robin or you're getting some sort of distribution, but you want to know if something's running hot. And you also want to know on the egress, how fast is a consumer group reading? When we think about a consumer group for event hubs, that would be something like if you had, I always use the two stream example, like a hot path and a cold path. Let's say this top thing is writing to storage. You just want to archive all your events. Well, that's one workload that's going to look and function a certain way. Let's say the bottom thing is your alert pipeline. This is where you're going to signify that something's going wrong or look for alerts or fraud detection or something. So these are two full views of the stream, and you want to make sure they're both reading at the appropriate pace for that workload. And that's at two levels. One, the aggregate for the entire consumer group. Two, the individuals for each partition within it. So when we look at our monitoring options for event hubs, we really have two big options. We have aggregates and instantaneous values. We have APIs to expose both to you. Aggregates are very good over time. They're delayed by nature because our smallest window is 5 minutes. If you've ever logged into the Azure portal and seen a chart, has anyone done that in the room? If any service in Azure, they all use the same pipeline. So we're using the same thing everyone else is here. Funny that your telemetry pipeline has a telemetry pipeline of its own, but that's okay. After that, it's just more and more telemetry. So they're very good for long-term stuff. The instantaneous stuff, well, I mean, yeah, it's instantaneous, right? It's a direct call against our servers. You're getting data at that exact moment when you called it, so you're getting performance characteristics. It's not this. It's not smoothed out. It's completely rough. So if we look at the instantaneous APIs, again, we have two different APIs you can use there. One of them is available in REST, and one's not. And the two ways to do this are through our SDK or through REST directly. So let's talk about our SDK first. If we look inside of our SDK, the first thing in there is a lightweight mechanism. So, you know, it's kind of like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle when you're looking at throughput, right? You can't just keep asking how fast you're going all the time. You're going to slow down what you're asking. You're going to put too much load on it for metadata. So this is a metric capability we built in recently. This is in our Event Hub client. It actually uses the AMQP channel. AMQP is our preferred mechanism for communicating messaging and telemetry. It's advanced message queuing protocol. It's a standardized protocol, an ISO standard, IEC standard, made for messaging. It gives us sophisticated things like flow control. So flow control lets us use a credit system to say how much a consumer can read or how much a sender can send. And throttle them and give them a graceful way to back off before we have to do hard limiting. It also gives us things like this capability, which is the channel itself has metadata. So if you're hooked up to an event hub sending data, that channel will actually be able to feed back metadata to us. That AMQP link can see what's going on for a specific AMQP link or session. We can see things like the ingress rate, so how many megabytes per second. I think it's in bytes per second. We can see the sequence number. If we think back to that chart of what an event hub looked like, the partitions all had data in them. Each of those pieces of data has a sequence number that's unique in that partition, and it's a number that's counting up. So you can see what the first one in the partition is and the last one in the partition. And then you can also see the time for the last event that was put into that partition. So already you're getting some really useful data. You can see if you're reading and you're seeing this stuff, you can see, well, I'm reading sequence number X, I can see the latest one is Y, I'm this far behind Y, and you can calculate like if you're falling behind. So this is a way you're getting in process a way to see what's going on. We have another less lightweight way to do this. Keep in mind though, this is on a per partition basis. If we look back at that couple slides back, you know, the partitions themselves, this is pretty raw, this is pretty low level. You can go a higher level up and use our namespace manager to get some information. That last call, this call, you can call this as much as you want. Call it every millisecond. I don't care. It's going to be fast because it's pulling off the AMQP channel. This is going to be much slower, but it's available in REST or in our API. And it's something you shouldn't call very often because this is going to affect the performance of your event hub itself. And this call is going to count against you as one of your calls in your throughput. But this shows you some more. It shows you things like ingress rates, incoming and outgoing bytes per second. You can see the size of the partition in bytes. This is kind of useful because you might have four partitions, and because of some way that you've chosen a hashing algorithm, to write to them or to localize your data or keep your data in proximity to each other, one is getting hotter than the others. Hotter meaning more traffic than the others. It's growing faster than the others. So this is good information for you to know what's going on. Again, it's one of those things where you don't want to be too aggressive with it. You'll notice here as well that it has a consumer group name in it. It's actually an overload. You can call this with or without that. So that'll give you for the entire Event Hub partition, so across all consumer groups or within a consumer group. You have an option of what you're going to look for there. So that lets you know, okay, if I'm the fast pipe telemetry consumer group, I want to know what my rate is. Or if I'm just writing a high level overall monitoring piece, I can omit that and get what is the egress for this partition across all consumer groups. They're both useful pieces of information for different purposes. All right, what if you don't want to use .NET? Who here doesn't use .NET? Who uses something else? Any Node people? Okay, all right, there's one. There's always one. So if you don't want to use .NET, you will need a SAS token. You can use REST. If you're using .NET, since you all are, use our SDK. Use the Service Bus SDK. It's going to be way, way easier than anything else. you don't have to use it, though. So really, you can use something else. I actually like to use SOAP UI. I've got it running here. I might show that in a second. So if you were going to do something else, you need the SAS token. We've got a link here that shows you on our blog all about how to use SAS tokens and examples and how to get them in a lot of different languages. SAS tokens just a SHA of a URI. So it's just an authentication mechanism. It's pretty easy. Got an example of how you make SAS token in Node, just in case there were any Node people in the room. I'm kind of relieved to see there aren't. So this is pretty easy then. What you do is you just use URIs to hit your data. So in this case, these are some useful URIs. The top one would be whatever your namespace is, and then the end of it is whatever your Event Hub name is. You can do a get against this, and you're going to get some information about that Event Hub. Back is XML. You can then append these other pieces to your URIs. You can get a consumer group. Hit the consumer groups, and you'll get a list of all the consumer groups. Hit the default consumer group, $default. There always is one at least, and you can get statistics about that consumer group. You can also use a partition name, which is usually a number, actually, but we call it name, and get data like we talked about, focused within that consumer group for that specific partition. And you can actually do the one below. We'll give you all partitions. So just as a quick example to see what this looks like in SOAP UI, this is probably going to be impossible to project, but yeah, there's SOAP UI. So here I went against $default, all partitions. And what I can see is metadata about every partition in the Event Hub. So I can see these size things that I talked about, the rates. This one's off right now. Nothing's running through. But it's useful. And the cool thing about this, yeah?
Is the content type always XML?
Yeah, it is. That is a very good question about the content type being always XML. Yeah, our content types are XML. It's roadmap. Technical debt. We all have technical debt. There's a similar experience for working with the aggregate metrics. Has anyone used the aggregate metrics APIs for storage or anything else in Azure? For storage? Yeah. So first to use it, you have to create a management certificate or use AAD. After you've created your management certificate, you can upload your certificate to Azure, and then you have to use a header that's specific for whatever service you're calling. And there's an MSDN article here. If you can avoid doing this, I would avoid doing it. It's not my favorite way to work with this stuff. Like, it's kind of painful. Sorry, I know people worked really hard to make it, but yeah. If you need it, you need it. So the next thing is client metrics. So when I say client metrics, what I really mean are performance counters. So we ship a whole set of performance counters for Windows, which is what our .NET client runs on. We have an example of how to use them with web or worker roles up here. They're not hard to use. We do have samples. And this particular sample logs into the normal performance counters table in Azure. Who in this room has used performance counters in Windows before? ever. Okay, good. Really, that's all? I was expecting 100% there. So performance counters in Windows are awesome. Like, this is something that goes back to, for me, to my BizTalk days, I'd say, or MSMQ days, when you really need to see what's going on across a bunch of servers. So you want to know, why is my SQL database slow? Well, a performance counter is a great way to do that. You want to know, why is my BizTalk server not putting through as many messages as I thought it would? Performance counter is a great way to do that. So if we look at our performance counters, we give you several layers of performance counters. Some are namespace wide. So namespace really means DNS for us. It's the top level root that all of our toys live under. And you can see there's some useful stuff in here. You can see how many messaging factories you have. And I don't really want to get too deep into what that is, but you could think about it as TCP channels. You can see your ingress and egress rates, and that's across everything in that DNS. So everything at that namespace, you can see these rates through. And the server is just going to be able to log this to the normal Windows performance log stuff. You know, the performance logs for Windows will also show you things like CPU utilization, disk latency, stuff like that. That's where people usually see them from. Has anyone used the PAL tool, performance analysis of logs? Yeah, awesome. That is a cool tool. And Clint is an awesome guy, by the way. If you haven't used that and you're ever having performance problems on Windows, check that tool out. If you turn these on and you want to feed the data somewhere interesting, PAL is a great tool to use. So here you can see there's some high-level stuff. This means, again, this is global. When we use the term entity in all of the services in Service Bus, what we really mean is the thing that was appended after the DNS, after the FQDN. So that could be a queue, it could be a topic, it could be an event hub. In this case, it would be an event hub. And you can see some entity level, performance counters here. These are going to be things that are specific to specific queue, that specific topic, that specific thing, whereas the other ones are going to be global. So again, they're both useful. You pick what you want to use. I know this is a big list. I just wanted to put it here for completeness. These are the things we encourage people to actually check when they're, especially for event hubs. It's a good one because you can see things like, well, how many failures are you having? You know, failures will happen for sending for a variety of reasons. Sometimes they'll be network reasons. Sometimes they'll be because you're being throttled. So you pay for our service by reserving capacity for it. How much capacity you get depends on what you're paying. We sell this in like 1 megabyte chunks. You start sending more than a megabyte and you're going to get failure sending. And you might not realize you're getting failure sending. You just see, well, stuff's stopped at 1 megabyte for some reason. It's the weirdest thing. I thought it'd go up to like 30. So this is kind of how you're going to see that. Spent time on a support call this week about this. That's why it's on this slide right now, because this is really important stuff. I don't really want to talk too much about reading from event hubs, although you can see you do get receive metrics here. But if you're reading from event hubs, the way I would encourage you to do it is with Event Processor Host. Event Processor Host is an intelligent agent that we made that does all that partition stuff for you. It takes care of all the partition management, all the coordination, things like that. It's actually probably, I'd say, it's the most sophisticated piece of distributed software I've ever seen. And I don't mean in like a complex, I mean in a mature, simple, fast, efficient way. So it's really awesome. If you're working with event hubs and you're writing code against it, you should be using Event Processor Host, period. We also have separate metrics just for Event Processor Host. Actually, of all the customers for Event Hubs, which is like 5,000, there's only one that's not using Event Processor Host that's on .NET. So if you're not doing these, like, you're doing something wrong. Like, right, those metrics aren't hard to get. You can turn them on a server without recompiling your code, without changing your solution. Like, this is just performance counters. Just turn them on. And you'll be able to start gathering data there. So when we start talking about gathering data and using data, there are really three places that you can monitor data from. You can do in-process monitoring, you can do in-worker or in-the-same-machine monitoring, and you can do outside-in monitoring. Which you choose to do is completely up to you. If you're really serious, you might do all three, but doing none is not a good option. So again, just to throw that out there. Let's look real quick at in-process monitoring. In-processing monitoring is going to be these things like AMQP stats. So the first API that I showed, this would be changing your code to actually be aware of rates and of egress and ingress rates of what you're sending and receiving. It also involves a little bit more work on your side. So things like keeping track of the last thing you received. So no, that's knowing where you are. You know, like a map's a useful thing to get, but if you don't know where you are on the map, it's not all that useful because you can't figure out where you're trying to go. So that's the where you are. The stats, the AMQP stats, can help you see where you're going to go. You know, how you're going to get there. So if you don't do a little bit of work on your own, you're going to be in a tough place with this. I mean, you can see that something's going wrong, but you're kind of powerless to change it, right? If you do some in-process things, though, you can trigger your own alerts. You can spin up more instances. If you see, hey, my last received is way, way behind where it should be, you can do things like spin up more worker roles. So this is useful because I already talked to these points. If you're going to do this, definitely track the last received offset and sequence and the first and last sequence. So, and the deltas between them. So these are the combinations of things you keep track of and things we'll give you. The next one is in process monitoring. Oh, that last piece, handle exceptions explicitly. Our client's really good at hiding exceptions from you. We have a default retry policy. Because we have this credit-based system for flow control, you can try and send a million messages a second, and if you're only paying for 500,000, we'll stop you at 500,000, and you'll just magically think there's something wrong and it's not going faster. It's because you're getting these exceptions, and they're being caught by our client. The client's slowing down. So you do want to explicitly handle exceptions yourself, not just catch messaging exception or general exception and move on. No, it's important to know what that exception was, because we've got a lot of different exceptions we'll show. So if someone goes and disables or deletes an event hub, it's going to throw a different exception than if you're getting throttled for the event hub. But they're both of type messaging exception. So be careful what you're doing with them. The next would be in worker or on the same machine monitoring. So this is a good option for if you don't want to change your code, you've got something in production, it's already running. Who likes to change running stuff? Yeah, right? We do it all the time. It's great. Thanks, Service Fabric. But we have a pretty sophisticated team with doing that. So we deploy without taking our services down. We have a lot of luxuries that most people don't have. Usually when something gets deployed to production, it's probably the last time it's ever going to be touched. So if you did deploy to production and you didn't have any monitoring in place, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. I'm very disappointed in you, but you can redeem yourself a little bit. And so you should have already done all the in-process stuff, but if you didn't, you can at least add the performance counters here, right? So these are things you can do on that worker role. You can write out stats to a log of your own. You choose how you do that. Maybe that log will be another event hub. I don't know. Don't use the same event hub, though. And probably not in the same region. It could be a queue. It could be storage. Do whatever you want. Just keep the data somewhere so you know what's going on. This is really just about adding those perf counters. So this is sort of the second layer of the cake, right? Importantly too, start setting alerts on these thresholds. So the nice thing about those perf counters is you can see them all the time. You can tell Windows, hey, alert me when these things go past this number that I'm going to choose. What that number is for you is going to depend on your solution. You know, if you're doing something like derivatives off this data or moving averages, with complex math, it's going to run a lot differently than if you're just batching stuff up to write to storage. So it's hard for us to say what's the right one, what's the wrong one. So use a bunch of them, figure out what's right for you. The best thing to do is if you're logging this stuff and you have a problem, this really helps you go back and see what was the problem. Like what was the indicator of the problem? Like Nirvana, the place you want to be able to know that the problem's coming. You know, it'd be like, hey, there's a truck coming right for me. I better get out of the way. But at least this way, you'll know that the truck hit you and what it was and that it was a truck and to look out for trucks next time. And there are a lot of tools out there that'll help you do this. PAL was just one of them. SCOM is one of them. A lot of tools will help you do performance counter monitoring. The last piece is outside-in monitoring. So this is going to be completely separate. This can be in a different region or the same region. This is going to be using things like the aggregates and those sort of expensive entity-level stats. Again, please do the other stuff also. Look at your aggregates. This is where you're going to see changes over time the best. You want to observe your kind of pipeline's runtime and specifically the event hubs part of it from a little bit further away just so you're not interfering with the machines that are actually doing the sending and receiving. Because the more workload you put on them for telemetry, the less they're going to be able to accomplish for what you're trying to get done. check the entity stats with REST or with our API, which is using REST, but don't overdo it. These are really expensive, especially the one I showed on the screen, which is like, hey, give me all the partitions in this vent hub and all their performance stats. We have to go ask each machine what its performance stats are. So if you do that like every second, it's not going to work out well for you, believe me. And it's going to work out even worse for me. And then I'm going to like you even less. Save this data. So don't just keep calling it all the time. Be like, oh, I can always rewind. I can always call it back, right? No, save the data back. The instantaneous stuff, it's not in the aggregates. It's reflected in the aggregates, but you'll never get it back. So the instantaneous call will be different a second later. But keep track of where it is. There's not much data in there. When I showed the SOAP UI thing, which is back on my screen now, you can see it's not too much, but at least you can keep track of it, keep your own moving averages, things like this. And this is how you're going to look out for trends. This is how you're going to see growth trends or trends where you're not keeping up. And why you want to do that, I'll address in just a second. So at this point, let's take a quick break. Whew. Right. A lot of telemetry. So I was actually going to ask, speaking of maps and knowing where you are, I have no idea where I took this photo. I know it's on an airplane. I think I'm heading west. That's about it. Although I guess that could be the sunrise. So anyone know who Parsley is? All right. Well, so, okay. Parsley is a service. They're US-based. They're a pretty popular cloud service. They did something, I should say, they had an outage. And what they did was really cool was they did a very detailed write-up of exactly what their outage was. Microsoft does this a lot. They did a very frank and honest one. It was pretty cool. They use Kafka. Does anyone use Kafka in here? Kafka's cool. I mean, if you're on-prem, it's a great thing. So Kafka's a lot like Event Hubs. It's like an open source, very similar concept. Again, partition consumer model. They talk in depth about what happened here. And what happened here was that you think about the write and read model. I keep talking about one in and two out. Well, that's how people start off, is usually write and then read something once, and then they'll read something twice, and then they'll tap into the stream again and read it again. Because like, unlike a queue, an event hub, a partition, you don't delete the data. It ages off over time. So each reader reads, it's like a client-side cursor. Each reader reads at its own pace. You can read as many times as you want. Well, it leads to this tendency where you just keep reading more and more and more and more. You add something on, you have a seventh function that you want to do, and for Parsley, it was seven. That was their magic number. They added a seventh set of readers. And what they were doing was they were sending in only like 20 or 30 megabytes per second, but they're reading out sevenfold that. And it's running on their clusters, and everything's going fine, and it's highly available because Kafka will let you set up clusters with replication, and then they hit the network saturation point of egress, and the first machine in the cluster died. Well, and then the cluster wanted to rebalance the load across it, which is something WinFab would do for you too. But like, sorry, Service Fabric. No one knows that old name anymore. So then the cluster went to go rebalance, and things actually got worse because all the nodes are very close to saturation on their network level. And when the first one fails, you're telling all the others, hey, pick up, take what you're already doing and pick up some of this traffic too. And then another node failed, and eventually every node failed, and they couldn't even turn it back on. So what's interesting is that, so we have a throttling mechanism that we use that will prevent that from happening, but so you won't fail. Your cluster won't fail. Your event hub won't go away, but something kind of worse can happen. And that's that our model, again, based on our throughput units, what a throughput unit is, this is a thing you pay like 3 cents an hour for. It's 1 megabyte per second or 1,000 events of ingress and twice that amount of egress. But you can have up to 20 of those consumer groups I mentioned. So that would be 20 consumer groups reading from every partition. So you can get this out of balance really fast. Something interesting can happen here. For instance, and this, I tried to draw these as much to scale as possible. You can see that these add up in an approximate height to this. So to twice this. So yeah, it's one in, two out. This is what you're paying for. The problem is none of these is as big as this. So what's happening here over time is that you're not keeping up. and what's going to happen, everything's going to be cool. You're going to be fine. And then later on, at some point, you're going to be like, hey, we're falling behind. Like, all the data's old. We see latency. Then what's going to happen is the data in the partitions is going to age out before you ever even get to it. And now there's chunks of your data that's missing. You're like, well, how do we go from Tuesday to Saturday? Well, that's how, you know, because we aged off in chunks when they're done and sealed and written out. And you could say, so we retain the data for a period that you set. It's set in days. The default's 1 day. You can go up to 7 days. And you could try to fool yourself by saying, well, I'll just kick it up to 7 days. You're just making your problem bigger. You know, like it's not going to go away. So without monitoring, you're not going to know this is going to happen. So what's dangerous here is you can just buy more throughput units. Fine. Go ahead. Great. I want the money. But you're just kicking the can down the road, because if you don't know what's coming in here versus what's going out there, you won't know when you're hitting the limit. Like the way this will manifest itself before just losing data, you'll get a warning. You're probably ignoring it because you're not processing the exceptions or using performance counters. And that will be that you're being throttled on your receive. And the throttle is a fairness-based throttle. So every reader is being slowed down at an equal rate based on how much they're reading. If you don't log those, you don't use performance counters to see those errors happening, those read throttling things happening, it's just going to keep reading. It's going to retry. Nothing's going to fail. But then one day you're going to be missing chunks of data. You know, so like this is, our service will not help you with this. Our statistics and metrics will help you, but it's completely your responsibility to make sure that you're not doing this. And as it's interesting, when we designed the service, we really thought the one in, two out pattern would be the most common, sort of like a fast path and a cold path is what we imagined coming out of the event hub. It's actually not turned out to be reality. People read more than twice. They use Stream Analytics to do some alerts. They use something else to write everything to storage. They might use Storm in an HDI cluster to do other processing. Or they'll use multiple Stream Analytics jobs reading the same data, doing different things to it. But those just keep adding up the reads and keep making this problem worse and worse. So really, this is a pretty serious problem. Yes?
So should I then break off one of these reads and put it in a new event hub and fan out?
That's an excellent question about fanning out and about if it's better to break off some of these reads and put them in a different event hub. That's a tough answer, too. So the tough part, there's no one right way to do any of this stuff. And actually, a throughput unit isn't even sold for an event hub. It's sold for a whole namespace. So just having two event hubs won't actually solve your problem. What you really need to do is think about how many times you're reading and if there are times you can combine those together. So if like each of these consumers has to read the whole stream, there's no choice about that. There's no filters or anything. So you're reading the whole stream. So if you're reading the whole stream anyway, and you're only processing like 1% of the messages, and then you have something else reading the whole stream to process another 1% of the messages, those things should probably be reading from the same stream. You know, I know it's easier, especially at first, to just keep adding stuff to it, but this is the cost you're going to pay. You know, cost literally, because you have to buy more throughput units, it will cost you more, although at 3 cents an hour, I wish we had charged more. It's not much cost, but the cost is going to come in technical debt. And over time, that's going to be a problem. Now, if you have separate things that are reading the whole stream and doing stuff with it, you know, that's okay. It's okay to have a few of those. But you want to keep that ratio in line with our idea here, one in, two out. This is something we might address in future versions of the service. But right now, this is the reality. You know, and a lot of people are using the service. Like I said, 60 billion a day. So, clearly, we have a lot of usage out there, and why I wanted to get this topic out there is because we haven't really talked about this publicly. We haven't really documented this. It's a challenge that's faced by our internal customers, meaning in Microsoft, and by our external customers, meaning all of you. So I wanted to kind of discuss this for the first time here and get some feedback on it and figure out what are the best ways to present this. I've a little bit more to go through, but I actually do want to take a few questions right now about any of this stuff, so yes.
Do you think it consumed once it's read?
This is a great question. The question is, isn't the data consumed once it's read? And this is a difference for things like services or platforms like Kafka and Event Hubs from messaging platforms like MQ series or service bus or BizTalk, the data is not consumed when it's read. It stays in there and you can read it as many times as you want. And so it's actually only aged off over time, and we're the ones who age it off. So the clients can't explicitly delete from an event hub. And that is the kind of the, it's the cause of some of these problems, but it's also the way that we are able to have parallelization and speed. Because doing that ACK, doing that delete for each and every message is a very expensive operation. So we've decided to avoid that operation to make this faster, especially because we do acknowledge that people want to read more than once usually. So this is a different animal than like messaging. It looks kind of the same. It feels kind of the same. You send messages. I shouldn't even call them messages. You send events and you read events. But what's going on is a little bit different. So yeah, we're not acking off messages, and we're doing a time retention buffer. So that's a great question. This is great. So the question is how to prevent your event hub or your partitions from getting full. So full doesn't really happen, because what we do is basically a throughput unit is entitling you to 84 gigs a day of storage. And when you fill that up, basically every 32 megabytes, we block off this piece of storage and say it's done. And we put a date on it. And then after that, you've hit that 84 gigs, we're going to start looking at those finished blocks and deleting them 32 megs at a time. So there's really no way to fill more than 84 is all you can do in 1 megabyte per second in a day. So you can't really go past that without buying more to use, which also gets you more storage. But the aging thing just happens, and it happens. And it'll happen. Usually it's more than 24 hours, but there's no way to stop it. So yeah, you need to, that is why it's important to know where you're reading in relation to what you've stored. So there's a question about, do we expose the data about what's been allocated and how much is left out of the 84 gigs? We don't, because 84 gigs is the max you can write at 1 megabyte per second. So you actually can't go faster than that. It's not possible. And if you keep the data, so you raise your retention period from 1 day to 7 days, we actually charge you the storage for your data in Blob. So, you know, you have to pay extra for that. Blob storage is pretty cheap, so it's not that much. And then the real question that you're driving to is, do we show you a way of what is the aggregate total amount stored? We don't really, because it's on a per partition basis. And you could have a lot of event hubs with a lot of partitions. So it's actually quite a bit of work to figure out how much do I actually have stored in my namespace for all my event hubs right now. I wanted to bring this up. So there's a tendency by a lot of people who use our product to just, so you have to pick partitions when you create it. You say, how many partitions do you want? And everyone just puts the drop down to the highest value there. Because they're like, yeah, I want more. Okay, I should say all the American customers I have always put the drop down to the highest level there. This is a great example of why that's not always the best idea. Because now I have to look in 32 places to figure out what I have. Well, now you're actually hurting yourself, not helping yourself. We changed our defaults down. We literally just guessed and picked a number. Yes, I admit it. I guessed and picked a number. And we chose 16 as the default. It's the wrong number. Most people need like 2 or 4. And so we changed default to 4, and the minimum is now 2. And so what we're doing is making it easier to see this. But we're also trying to make it so that it's easier to not get yourself in these tough situations where you can't figure out what's going on or why some of these, the worst part that happens is why some of these partitions, especially when you pick big numbers like 32, 31 of them are running great and one of them's got a problem and you just can't figure out what the problem is. Then you put in all this telemetry and all this instrumentation, it drives you to some answers on the problem, but usually the problem has nothing to do with your writing or reading. It has to do with some sort of processing, like you have a backlog on something in that, or you've just chosen randomly. I guess, okay, I didn't want to get too deep into what Event Hubs like does and how we store the data, but when you send the data, you have a choice to make. The choice is default, which means we will just round robin your data across all the partitions. This gives you really good availability. I gave a talk at Ignite New Zealand 2 weeks ago about it, and it's definitely worth looking at. This means that if a partition is unavailable for any reason, that's why I showed that cluster view, what our runtime looks like, we will just skip to the next machine, so next partition. The other choice we give you is to set a partition key. And that partition key is something we're going to hash, and we're going to use that to figure out which partition that value should always go to. So partition key is a value you create, you give us. It's a metadata property on the event, and we will always send it to the same partition. It's actually a really cool concept because instead of chaos, so data being everywhere, you're getting a guarantee that the data will be in the same partitions, the same place, and it will be in the order in which it was sent. So you're getting a very hard guarantee of both of those. There's a downside to this guarantee, and that's an availability aspect, and that's because in order for things to be in order, you have to have one writer, right? You have to have someone who's the arbiter of order. So that means that decision needs to be made by a machine on our side, and there can only be one of those machines, or it won't be in order. If you do that, you find yourself in a way where you could pick a value that you thought was pretty unique, but it's not as unique as you thought it was. You know, something, the perfect example is something like postal codes, you know, because you get some postal codes that have a lot of people in them and some out in the country that have very few people in them. So that's a bad partition key. Excellent question. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Cool. So what did we learn today from this, right? Please, please, always do some monitoring. Really? I mean, we've made this great thing, and then you don't know what's going on in it. I should do the blank screen again. Yeah, it makes me want to cry. So you have a lot of choices about how you want to do monitoring. Pick what's best for you. You don't have to do all these things. I can count on one hand the number of customers who do all of these things. And one of them is another service that provides monitoring for people. So, of course, they know about monitoring. They do a really good job, too. That was App Insights. But pick something. Pick what's right for you. If nothing else, just use the aggregate APIs, or even if your monitoring is someone logging into the portal and looking. Like, just look. See what's going on. Our portal, you know, experience, if you've worked with Event Hubs, you'll notice that it's delayed quite a bit. We're writing a lot of stuff. Like the team that runs the pipeline for the portal, for the telemetry in the portal, they're like, hey, we don't want 800,000 things a second. Like, you slow that down and give us something more useful. You can add monitoring into a solution you already have. Don't be afraid of that. Really, things like performance counters, totally out of band. It's not really going to slow you down much. It's not going to hurt you very bad. And then lastly, you know, if you're not watching your telemetry pipeline, like, who is, right? I mean, what's going on? So it is your responsibility to do this. And because I'm trying to include a picture of my dog in every presentation, here he is watching me. He looks pretty serious too, actually, there. So just keep that in mind. If you're not watching this, who is, right? And he's monitoring me. So thank you. And if there are any other questions, I'd be happy to take them now. But they don't have to be limited once we're done with the video part to just Event Hubs and telemetry.
Any further questions?
I've got one. So you mentioned App Insights there. I'm an IT guy, okay? So my devs have written stuff that I've got no idea what's going on. Can I wire in App Insights or Op Insights to use your tools to monitor your stuff if my devs haven't done their job right?
So the question, oh, well, it's been recorded, so yeah. That is an awesome question. At this time, not really. You can to some extent. Either of those services will give you some capability, but no, we just, it's a big company. We haven't all gotten together to say, hey, this is the right solution for this. But we are looking at adding in App Insights telemetry into our client. Our challenge with that is that we have a very diverse customer base, and some of our customers really, really demand high performance. So on a single machine, and I'll talk about it this afternoon, like, you can, if you have a big beefy machine and you really know what you're doing with our client, you can send 100,000 messages a second. But if you start putting telemetry on each of those sends, it's going to, you know, really slow down a lot. So that's kind of a problem. So right now, no, we kind of have a gap there. I'm hoping that gap will be solved soon.